week, actually, or last session. And we'd like to continue along the same line, if you don't mind. Srechavit, let me ask you this question at the beginning of this episode. Is it permissible for men to wear women's clothes? And even vice versa, you know? I mean, women wearing men's clothes inside their house, though, without the intention of emulating the opposite sex?
Well, we know that, generally speaking, it's not permissible for a man to wear a woman's clothes, and the vice versa is also true. When it comes to wearing the clothes and garments of the opposite gender, there is a consensus among the religious authorities that in public, a person cannot wear the garments and clothing of the opposite gender in general public, you mm-hmm. see. That's not permissible.
Okay.
But when it comes to one's own house, if a man chooses to wear his wife's garment,
yes,
there is no problem, because it's okay for the wife to accept her husband wearing her clothes.
Yes.
And the opposite is also quite okay. It's permissible. And the religious authorities, including His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, have not objected to this scenario.
Mm-hmm. So it's no problem actually at home?
Yeah, of course.
I see. Okay, fine. Well, what's the ruling in the matter of men buying or even selling women's lingerie or even underwear?
Well, there's no harm in it. You know, in and of itself, it's okay, it's permissible for men to sell women's clothing mm-hmm. and lingerie, of course, as you said. Of course, they have to sell it, and people need them. Okay, the ladies can buy these things from them.
Yes,
but if it includes some kind of trying in front of the man, it's not permissible, because these are undergarments. And a woman cannot wear these undergarments in front of the a non-mahram man. Okay, so when it comes to buying and selling these things or it is quite permissible. Otherwise, when it comes to wearing them in front of a non-mahram, it's not permissible.
Mm, I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Srechavit, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to clothing and conspicuous garment, according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Srechavit, is it permissible to make, buy, or even sell transparent stockings?
Well, the answer is very much like the answer I gave earlier. There is no objection to making and trading in these things, stockings, lingerie, women's special clothing, provided that they are not intended for women to wear before men who are non-mahram to them.
Mm.
And we know from the answers I gave, according to the fatwa of His Eminence Karna Ayatollah Khamenei, that it's not permissible for a woman to wear transparent and see-through clothing. Mm-hmm. They are so transparent that their bodies and the shape of their bodies could be seen.
Yes, of course, in public.
Yeah, in public, of course.
But not at home for their husbands.
Yeah, of course. So women, Muslim ladies, should be careful not to wear those tight clothing. The clothing should not be so tight as to show the attractive parts and the contour of the woman's body. And also they should not be very much, they should not be revealing see-through, or let's say use the transparent, the word transparent clothing. We see, like, for example, in countries like India and Pakistan, unfortunately we see that they are wearing a kind of hijab which is very thin, very transparent. The ladies wear them, and it has become a commonplace in among the Muslims, ladies, Sunnis and Shias. We see that they wear clothes that are very much revealing. They consider it as hijab, but it's not real hijab. Real hijab is a kind of hijab which does not show the contours of the body, and also which are not see-through, you see, transparent. And that's not the case with ladies, especially in most, you know, countries in the Indian subcontinent, like Pakistan and India.
I see. Well, Shahjavid, is it permissible for unmarried men to work in boutiques, selling women's clothes and cosmetics, provided that they abide by the religious laws as well as ethical norms?
Well, according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, the permissibility of legitimate work and earning halal living is not confined to one group of people, you see. It is therefore permissible for anyone to go about their business, to work, to engage in trading, to buy things and sell things, provided that they abide by the Islamic norms and ethics. There are certain ethics and certain rules and norms which must be observed, and these are religious norms, of course. But of course, if the competent authorities require special conditions for trading in certain sectors which may have been designed to protect the public interest, they have to be observed. Those of course, rules designed for by the authorities, the qualified authorities, in order to maintain and promote public morality, must be abided by.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Shahjavid. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay with us.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jahad, hosting this program, and Shahjavid, our guest speaker. The topic is still some of the jurisprudential laws related to clothing and conspicuous garment, according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Shahjavid, you know, one of the things that sometimes you see that, you know, even men wear is some kind of chains or necklaces. You know, we know that the necklaces are usually worn by women, right?
Yes.
But sometimes men wear chains. Is there any problem with that?
I don't think there is any problem. Based on what I understand from the fatwa of the religious authorities, including His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, It's generally speaking, there's no problem whatsoever in wearing such chains, provided those provided that those chains are not made of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And we know for sure that it is not permissible under any circumstances to wear gold ornaments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
For men it's forbidden, and of course, gold is forbidden for men, and whether it is in the form of necklaces, whether it is in the form of, let's say, a ring or any other items. Like, for example, I've seen in some, you see, weddings, in the families of the bride,
yes,
give a gold ring to the groom,
yes,
and the groom wear it on the wedding day.
Yes.
So this wedding day does not make give him a license to wear the gold item, the gold ornament. He should not wear the gold ornament, you see.
But what about platinum, which is called white gold?
If
it's not yellow.
It's, if it is considered gold in common view, the color is not important.
No.
So if in common view it is considered gold, the color does not make any difference.
I see.
Can be yellow, it can be white. So it's forbidden for men and to wear them. And also when it comes to, let's say, utensils, we see that utensils made of gold and silver are not permissible to use. And they are not permissible to use for ladies and for men equally.
How about gold teeth?
Gold teeth, again, it's not permissible
for
men to wear, yes.
I see.
Like wearing gold teeth.
How about crosses or any emblems and symbols of other religion? That sometimes even you see, unfortunately, a few Muslims actually wear. Is there any problem
when
with wearing like crosses?
Crosses.
Which show basically Christianity, right?
Yeah, of course. If they somehow is a kind of confirmation of their beliefs, of their values, and of their practices, like wearing a cross, it is not permissible according to any religious authorities. We cannot wear a cross and tell other people that I believe. This is the message that we give by wearing a cross. We believe that the for example, Prophet Jesus was crucified. When in fact, the Quran teaches something else.
Yes.
He is still alive, and we do believe based on the Quranic teachings.
He was never crucified in the first place.
So wearing such items would contradict our belief, and would give other people think that, would make other people think that, okay, we believe in such things while we do not. So if it is considered confirmation of their beliefs and their values, their
principles. But if they wear it for
principles,
ostentation, like they like it and they wear it, and they don't want to show that, for example, this is their conviction.
But whether you like it or not, what the other people understand is very important.
I see. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, whereby we try to deal with some of the jurisprudential laws related to clothes and or clothing and conspicuous garments according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
لا إله إلا هو الوحيد القدير. are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Have a very good time. This is Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. In 10th century Cordoba, an Umayyad Islamic dynasty city in Spain with over 70 libraries, the palace library alone had over 60,000 volumes, all written by hand. At the time, the best Latin library in Europe had only 600 parchment books. While the Chinese invested paper sometime before the 2nd century BC, Muslims were the first to mass-produce paper on an intercontinental scale, developing a culture dependent on its abundance. As the price of paper dropped, literacy rose and booksellers and libraries became integral parts of every Muslim city. Like Judaism and Christianity, Islam originated in the Middle East. And here's what's awaiting you on your radio station. Don't miss a beat. Up next is Let's Recite the Holy Quran. Mr. Habibullah Fasihzadeh will guide us. In this program, we teach eloquent recitation of the Quran at level 2. We also express tajweed points in the manner of confrontation or compare and match and apply them to the verses of the final surahs of the Holy Quran. A beautiful opportunity for reflection indeed. Then enjoy another segment from our radio productions. We've created a range of fascinating audio pieces for your listening pleasure. Coming up, we will have Let's Recite the Quran. Stay tuned.
Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا
الْقُرْآنُ نُورٌ وَبَيَانٌ الْقُرْآنُ هَدْيُ الْإِيمَانِ الْقُرْآنُ مِسْكُ الْخِتَامِ
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله respected brothers and sisters. Dear listeners, welcome back to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Xavier International Schools. Here is Ali Nasser with us, Muhammad Masoom with us, and Brother Hussein Ruhullah with us. I really, really welcome you all, and I am Habibullah Fasihzadeh. So, Hussein, Masoom, and Ali Nasser, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome.
Wa alaikum assalam.
How are you? Fine?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. So, guys, everyone is fine. So, let's not waste the time. Let's quickly start our class, inshallah. Today, we will be practicing Ayah 87, Surah Yusuf, Prophet Yusuf, alayhi salam. Hussein, tell us what page.
246.
So, ready to get started?
Yes. Yes.
The same as usual. First, let's listen to the recitation of this ayah. Ready?
Yes.
Let's go.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Ya bani yadhhabu fatahassasu min Yusuf wa akhihi wa la tayasu min ruhillah. Innahu la yayasu min ruhillah.
O my sons,
Go and find out about Joseph and his brother, and despair not of relief from Allah. Indeed, no one despairs of relief from Allah except the disbelieving people.
Nice recitation, mashallah. Dear Muslim brothers and sisters all over the world listening to IRB English radio right now. That was a nice recitation. Alhamdulillah, we really enjoyed. So, let's go and see what Allah Almighty says in this ayah. Then inshallah we will be explaining the most important tajweed rules here. Just to learn how to recite the Quran Kareem correctly without mistakes, without any tajweed errors. Alright? Yes?
Yes.
Let's see. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Ayah 87. Allah Almighty says that Prophet Yaqub alayhi salam, it's the story of Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam, yeah? Prophet Yaqub alayhi salam, Prophet Yusuf's father, said or told his sons that, Ya baniya, O my sons, idhhabu, go, fatahassasu min Yusuf, and look for Joseph. Go search for Yusuf. Okay? Look, we have, for example, tajassus, we have tahassus. There's a difference between these two. Tajassus means spying, right? Yes. Tahassus means searching. Okay? So Prophet Yaqub alayhi salam said, fatahassasu, go look for. This is something good. Tahassus is used when you're looking for something good.
Yes.
وَلَا تَيْأَسُوا مِن رَوْحِ اللَّهِ, and do not despair of Allah's mercy. Don't be disappointed. Don't lose your hope. So, what does it say, this ayah? Look, إِنَّهُ لَا يَيْأَسُوا مِن رَوْحِ اللَّهِ إِلَّا الْقَوْمُ الْكَافِرُونَ. See, this is so dangerous. It's so important. Look, the one who loses his hope, the one who has no hope in Allah Almighty's mercy, he is...
A disbeliever.
Thank you. Ali Nasir, I really want you to recite these ayah once. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to Ali Nasir. Inshallah, we'll explain the most important tajweed points. Ready, Hassan, Hussein and Masoom?
Yes.
Together with our listeners, let's listen to Ali Nasir. You may start.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
ما شاء الله
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
أحسنت
يا بني يذهبوا فتحسسوا من يوسف وأخيه ولا تيأسوا من روح الله
روح means the soul, right? روح has another meaning. Yeah. It comes from that word, but for example, look, when you go through some kind of challenges and hardships, and when ease comes to you and the problem is solved, you kind of become refreshed, as if you get a new soul. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, yes? That's called, this is also called, rauh means, the for example, hope, for example. Okay? That's why this is called, it's taken from that word, from soul or from ruh. Okay, rauhillah. This is rauhillah. Ruhullah, ruhillah, rauhillah. Go on. Sometimes students make this mistake because of that waw that you have. Okay, but remember that we have mad lean as well. Au, ay. It's not always oo and e.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي.
How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
You could resume from the word وَلَا تَيْأَسُوا. Move on.
وَلَا تَيْأَسُوا مِنْ رَوْحِ اللَّهِ إِنَّهُ لَا يَيْأَسُوا مِنْ رَوْحِ اللَّهِ إِلَّا الْقَوْمُ الْكَافِرُونَ.
أحسنت. ما شاء الله. There is a general point about his recitation, if you could say.
You mean there was a mistake?
It was like a... It's not a mistake in the words, but actually, it's a generally... It's like something common, usually, students make this... Yeah, we can call it mistake.
A pronunciation of letter R?
No.
No?
It was about his like the entire recitation was like he was not confident while reciting it.
Mm-hmm.
He was not confident. So you were not like really focused. You mean when you were reading, for example, إِنَّهُ لَا يَيْأَسُ مِرْ, as if you were looking, what's the next word? Okay? As you're reciting, you were looking for the next word. Oh my God, I shouldn't make mistake. What's the coming words? Okay? I feel like you were like this because you were like stretching some of the words that you didn't have to. Look, you were saying like this. إِنَّهُ لَا يَيْأَسُ مِنْ رَوْحِ اللَّهِ إِلَّا الْقَوْمُ. Like this. You were hesitating. And this shows that maybe this ayah is the first time you're reading it. Huh? Might be because of that. So, in recitation, you have to be confident, okay? And before you start reciting it, you have to take a deep, a quick look. Scan, okay? With your eyes, look at the ayah. So, I'm going to start from Fatahassasu, for example, and I'm going to end on Rawhillah. You have to, what? Make sure that where you start from and where do you make pause. This should be clear for you. Otherwise, if you just start reading, then maybe wherever you lose your breath, you stop, that is a bit difficult for you. Okay, it does not let you become a confident reciter. You have to assign a point from here to here. I'm going to start from, for example, فَتَحَسَّسُ, and I'm going to make a pause on رَوْحِلَّهُ. That's it, this part. Then you can confidently go read it. Alright? That's it. One more point. The very first word. يَا بَنِيَّ. How do you read? How do you join it to the next word? يَا بَنِي
يَذْهَبُ.
يَا بَنِي يَذْهَبُ. That Hamzatul Wasl is ignored because we...
Join
the words, okay? Otherwise, if you say Ya Bani, you make a pause, then you say Idhhabu, you put a kasra, right?
Yeah.
So that's it. This ayah is so easy. The last two points, easy. Min Rawhillah. How do you say?
Mir Rawhillah.
You?
Merge
them. This is called Qa'idatul
Idgham.
Idgham. The last point, the sign, that sign, stopping sign. Sila, what does it tell us?
It tells us that it's better to continue.
Better to continue, but you can make a pause. Yes, it indicates like that you can make a pause here, but better to continue. That's it. Thank you so much, Ali Nasir. Super easy, not difficult tajweed points, yeah? Ready to recite it together?
Yes.
Okay, I'll recite it. Make sure you listen to me. And repeat. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
يا بني يذهبوا فتحسسوا من يوسف وأخيه ولا تيأسوا من روح الله.
يا بني يذهبوا فتحسسوا من يوسف
يوسف وأخيه ولا تيأسوا من روح الله
إنه لا ييأس من روح الله إلا القوم الكافرون
إنه لا ييأس من روح الله إلا القوم الكافرون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
أحسنتم Thank you so much Allah bless you Brothers and sisters Dear listeners Thank you so much For being with us Hope you have learned something Stay with Arab English Radio Every day we are here with you Explaining one of the verses of the Quran With tajweed points And the recitation Guys, any questions?
Nothing? No.
No
That's it from us for today See you in the next session والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعجل فرجه
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Suffering within, this is the love has dyed me in blood. Nor that I'm wise, neither mad. Your love caused me all the joy, took my heart and made fond of it. Desired. To kill. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in despair. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me, got me deeply involved in this pain. Now and then, like the winds I blow, now and then, like the roads I go, now and then, like the floods I flow. I'm Yunus, mystic of sorrow, suffering wants from top to toe. In the hands of beloved, I write in woe. Come and see.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. A woman doesn't grow weaker with oppression. In fact, she grows stronger because God gives her strength. This from a mother of 11 and many more grandchildren living in a tent in Gaza, having been displaced from Al-Saftawi to Al-Shifa, Al-Daraj, Al-Saftawi again, Al-Sabra, Khan Yunis, Rafah, Baitul Hanun, and back to Khan Yunis. Trump, she says, can go back to his home because Gaza is their home, their holy land, and they are not giving it up. Here is more of Hiyam.
Time seems to operate differently in Gaza. For those who choose to distort or misrepresent the people and their land, time did not start before October the 7th. For those who have always connected with their home, connected with their people, and connected with their land, history may now have a before and after the 7th of the 10th, 2023, but the ties that bind are unbreakable. This is especially true for those who have seen the ebb and flow of Palestinian life play out. Hayam has lived through so much, and as bad as things have been, her foundation has helped to set the scene. For Gaza's enduring generation, the elders who have seen death and destruction before, the new genocide represents a fresh hell. The roll call of the martyrs, the missing, the injured, and the permanently scarred, continues to grow. Gaza, before the new Nakba, was an area that saw the lives of the people wholly controlled by the whims of Tel Aviv. Yet somehow Palestinians found a way to make the land work for them, carving out a life amidst the checkpoints, the blockades, and the restrictions. The uncertainty of the constant displacements, of not knowing where the next loss will come from, has had devastating impact on families like Hayam's. The hardships have only strengthened Hayam's fortitude and sense of connection to the land. Those who feel people with this literal grounding to their communities will be easily shifted have another thing coming. The world has failed Palestine. It has so far bitterly failed Gazans. It's not too easy to put yourself in the shoes of a Palestinian. They want what everyone else wants: food, clothing, shelter, peace. Now a concerted effort by Israel to ostensibly starve the resistance out of Gazans is hitting the youngest and most vulnerable. Tel Aviv is so far ignoring international laws and moral norms and using the denial of food as a weapon of mass murder. The false dawns and brief moments of respite have been a temporary balm to salve the open wounds of Palestinians attempting to stay alive inside Gaza. But the fresh bombs fall all too quickly, and the old stories with ever battered and bruised bodies play on repeat.
Joining me in the studio today to discuss Hiyam's journey is Maria Galastegui, a peace campaigner and coordinator at Peace Strike Campaign. Welcome, Maria.
Oh, I'm very pleased to be here.
Thank you. Maria, you know, Hiyam says something amazing. She says a woman is not become, she becomes stronger with oppression. She doesn't become weaker. But we do witness women breaking, you know, apart. What is so special about these women that the more they are oppressed, the stronger they get?
Yes, I think just naturally somebody's got to step up and take the lead, because obviously she's got 11 children and grandchildren, and she's got responsibilities. Some people will be broken by the trauma. I mean, they're surrounded by trauma the whole of their lives. It, depending on what age you are, I guess it affects you differently. But obviously she's got responsibilities. She's stepped up, and she's a role model for the people in her lives. So it's essential that somebody like her, she keeps going against all the odds, and understands she's got a back problem. So living in a tent, trying to cook, having to be on the floor, and be her pain level must be, you know, incredibly difficult for her life. But obviously she's pulling it all together, and she's keeping going no matter what the odds.
The thing is, Maria, you know, we speak to these women on a weekly basis, and I'm astounded that every woman is the same. You know, it's we haven't come across anyone who says, I can't do this anymore, you know, I can't take it anymore. They seem to actually thrive, in not in a positive manner, of course, but the survival instinct that kicks in. You know, you are a peace activist, you must have seen a lot of issues around there. Do you find their case to be different? Do you find their resilience to be different? Or is this something that when you're put in a situation, you just rise up to it?
Well, it's incredible. I mean, no one's been challenged the way they have. Yeah. You know, I mean, we've all got options. If you're doing something, things get too difficult, you've got the option to opt out. Yeah. They don't have that option. And even if they did now, they can't. Too much blood has been spilled. You know, not just from their lives and the children and the people around them every single day, but also the history of their parents going way back. So they can't give up the land now. All that would have been for nothing, in a sense. All that sacrifice, all that bloodshed. So they can't, and they won't. So that's the irony of the situation, because they've been put in a position now where they want to drive them off the land or kill them. But there's no way that they can do that, because it's a principle, it's a moral, it's the history. And they're making a stand for not just their humanity, but actually, ironically, for ours. They're showing us a way of resistance.
Absolutely.
They're teaching us.
Yeah, yeah, but, I mean, Maria, the amount of displacements, we heard how many places she's been to. You know, she's scared of sending a child out because they might get bombed, but then they also get bombed, you know, within the tent.
Yes.
Now we see when they go to, you know, receive aid, food aid, they are being targeted and killed.
Yes.
How much worse does it have to get, Maria, when the world takes account of this, takes stock of this and does something about it?
The world is aware. We are all aware. Globally, the support is for Palestinians, without a doubt. But it's the political system that's running the world. So grassroots activists will do everything. And as you know now, they've got the Freedom Flotilla. They're taking a risk. But they're showing the way that people do care. And that's a message to Palestine. There's a march going to Palestine. There's lots of things going on, but by grassroots campaigns. The big campaigns are doing marches and rallies, but they're not effective. They're not empowering the people. All that power when people come together. But after a march, it's dissipated. It's not effective, and it's not reaching out to Hayim in Gaza.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's the problem. We're not empowered. So
it is an interesting question, because, you know, I think, you know, it's good that all these things are happening, but it probably shouldn't have taken this long for us to be where we are today. Why has it taken this long, Maria? For example, you know, this march to Gaza. Why has it taken a year and a half?
I think because we normally, as the peace camps campaigns traditionally go, people join the big marches, the big campaigns. We've got video now. Everything's filmed. It all goes out into the world. But in reality, that power is not effective. So people then kind of waste their time, but they think that the next march will do it. It's big enough. It's got bigger. The influence for the governments, they will listen to us and they will follow what we say. But it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen, and we keep on going. And so this is all kind of wasted time, because we passed the emergency way, way, way back. We're beyond the emergency now. It should have come into effect, and it hasn't, because I hate to say this, but there's gatekeepers in everything.
Yeah. And, I mean, let's be honest, the gatekeepers are the Israeli lobby, really, when we're talking about around the world, who have taken hostage our politics here. How do we get rid of that, Maria? Because, you know, our governments, our politicians should be listening to us, but they're listening to foreign powers. Why?
I think because on their way up to being a politician, somewhere along the line, they're compromised. You know, a lot of them are friends of whatever, and they get compromised along the way. And when they actually get into power, instead of, you know, like the Labour Party doing now, what we're doing, there's been a court case about arming Israel to stop arms, all arms. The components of the F-35s should be finished. It's carrying on.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, now they've decided to say, oh, by the way, you know, things are getting very difficult. Israel needs to stop. We need to pull back on this. But they're too weak. They haven't been strong enough. They should have put sanctions on Israel and boycotts at least about a year and a half ago, at the very, you know.
Absolutely, and even the change of tone, it's taken forever for that to even, you know, we hear a foreign minister speak about these things. This should have been right at the onset.
Yes.
But let's talk about your journey, Maria. I want to hear, what is it that you do as a peace campaigner, and, you know, what challenges have you faced in that journey?
My campaigning goes back 22 years, and a lot of it was from the Iraq War. So the example was we the whole world marched, the biggest marches ever in our time, yeah. And we thought we had stopped the Iraq War. And, you know, because a lot of it was based on lies that were actually came out at the time, same like as now. Things have been discredited, as even as they've been said, but it doesn't seem to make any difference. So we did go to war with Iraq. It didn't stop the government. And then it never stopped the government, and we only came out of Iraq and Afghanistan when the Americans decided, oh, we need to pull out, because it suited them.
Yes.
So we pulled out, and they're worse than ever they were. You know, the argument of why we went in was it was a ruse. Mm. It's all to do with business and strategic power. So now we're back at the same situation with Palestine. We haven't empowered ourselves. So peace strike does, we call strikes for peace.
Okay.
So you go on strike. You don't have to be on a march. Mm-hmm. You can just be. So we've got a red alert for Palestine this Friday coming, which is the 6th of June. And we're trying to spread it like as much as we can, the message.
So, tell us what is it that people are supposed to do?
Well, you don't. If you can, you don't go to work, you don't go to school, you buy nothing, you don't use your credit card, you don't use a debit card, nothing in the system that enables the system, because the system is allowing the war machine to carry on, and we're trying to stop it. But obviously, it doesn't apply to emergency workers or essential workers. And we have to use our common sense. If we have to do certain things, we do. But the point is, we need to go in strike mode now and shut down 4 days. Different days that we. But the first one, the big one, will be this Friday. Mm. And we need to build them up. It's grassroots. It's not controlled. It's independent. So basically, we, the people, the grassroots people, we call the strikes, yeah. And we do it ourselves. It's a do-it-yourself campaign.
And I think that's where it has to come now, because we cannot wait for politicians. It should be them taking the action. But really, it has to be. And I think, you know, so much more needs to be done, so much more awareness. So many more people really need to move from just not supporting Israel to taking action, as you say.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Maria, for honoring us today with your presence. It is much appreciated. And thank you all. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio. Let's quickly navigate what's coming up next. We're excited to present these programs, so please stay with us. Time to delve into economic divide. If you are interested in economic or business issues, then this program is definitely for you. Top experts on the economy give expert analysis and commentary on the biggest business and economic stories of the day. mind-provoking insights into the economic issues, then it's time to listen to Spring of Truth. This program features English translations of selected powerful statements and speeches from the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. What's next up? We are featuring a collection of our finest radio productions. These are specially curated segments designed to entertain, educate, and inform you, dear listeners. So keep us company. Up next is Economic Divide.
Economic Divide.
Trump's tariffs had started during his first term as U.S. president. The U.S. president has now continued that during his second time in office. 7 months after his inauguration, the U.S. president has gone ahead and imposed tariffs on almost all countries that do trade with the U.S. Short-term gains, yes, but long-term fallout has the U.S. president and his economic team scrutinized that period fully. On April the 1st, Trump announced his tariff rates for all countries. Even though he backed down from his original rates, he has given countries until August the 1st for renegotiations, or else the tariff rates will go into effect. Coming up in today's program, Trump tariffs U.S. allies. Trump tariffs do not distinguish from friend or foe. Many, however, are saying the U.S. will not only create more enemies, many of U.S. allies may turn against the U.S. in one way or another. What is Trump's endgame? That is the key question. The tariffs will generate money, but the consequences not only for U.S. trading partners, but for the American consumers is too heavy. Global economic instability. The fallout from tariffs will surely affect the global economy, from income to supply chains. The world economy appears to be gearing up for a major reset, minus the U.S. We're going to be discussing those points and a whole lot more with Rodrigo Duval Ferreira, geopolitical analyst and lawyer, and also legal historian Matt Nielsen.
And thank you very much for having me here in the show. On the surface, if you see, if you look at their reaction, immediate reactions, they did not promise any retaliation on the tariffs. They did not announce any retaliation. On the contrary, both countries, Korea and Japan, they even announced the possibility of new investments, trying to use that as a bargain chip in order to have better negotiations with Trump's administration.
On July 7th, we received a letter from the U.S. government stating that a 25% tariff will be imposed on all products from our country, and that these tariffs will take effect on August 1st. It is truly regrettable that the U.S. government has recently announced an increase in tariff rates in addition to the additional tariffs already imposed.
When it was announced now recently, including against Iran, new tariffs, 10% tariffs on the BRICS countries, President of Brazil, where I come from, he just announced, okay, it's fine, we have a reciprocity law, and we're just going to impose same tariffs to you.
I've heard they're gonna tax Brazilian steel. If they tax Brazilian steel, we'll respond commercially. Either we'll file a complaint with the World Trade Organization or we'll impose tariffs on the products we import from them. I think that Donald Trump can say whatever he wants. He's the president of the United States, but he can't do whatever he wants. Because if he does things that impact other countries, there will always be a response.
And it's funny because Trump's then announced that if any retaliation is being taken by the BRICS countries, he's going to impose another 25% and which means it's not very clear, I think, for him what reciprocity means. Deep inside, what is important to understand in relation to Japan and Korea is, even though they don't show that they are imposing retaliation, etc., both from an economic perspective and cultural perspective, and a strategic, it is something that hurts. So there is a scar there, something that it needs to be taken in consideration.
Let's do a bit of catch-up here on where tariffs stand. Dozens of countries face so-called reciprocal tariffs if they don't strike trade deals with the U.S. by August the 1st. The Trump tariffs were set to take effect on July the 9th following a 90-day pause, but Trump on July the 7th announced a three-week extension in order to negotiate trade deals. The reciprocal duties, which initially proposed tariffs as high as 125% on China, tariffs were applied to more than 80 nations, first announced on April the 2nd. They were in place for just a few hours on April the 9th before they got pushed off for several months. If they take effect again, the targeted countries would face the steeper rate in lieu of the 10% global baseline tariffs Trump has already imposed across nearly all U.S. imports.
If you look at Trump's entire career as a businessman, even before he was a politician, it is on his book. He has always behaved like that. He tried to put as much pressure as he can in the beginning in order to try to get out from there the best worst-case scenario within negotiations. This was it was like this when he was a president in his first term. So it was very predictive that he would do again the same thing. China had already prepared for, as soon as he was elected, to a list of retaliations, being the rare earths, for example, a good example for that. So certainly so. It's important to understand also that US has always been a bully as a country. So Washington consensus was nothing else than that. So for countries that was highly indebted in US dollars, they would manipulate the currencies in order to put these countries in debt for them to get rescue with the World IMF or the World Bank. And in order to do that, they would have to make pension reforms, make labor reforms, and so on, and give privatize most of their strategic resources.
This is the social section of the program. In a letter to Carney, Trump announces a 35% tariffs on all Canadian imports to the U.S., more consumption taxes for working class Americans, and higher input costs for small businesses. Trump's 50% Brazil tariff, because nothing says America first like taxing your own citizens to defend someone else's coup.
Take us through what a 50% tariff with Brazil looks like for the American consumer.
Well, the first thing it's going to do is put the coup in Cupertino. We all drink a lot of Brazilian coffee. And now next time you